What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Block Hash Podcast. Before we jump into our episode with Oasis, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, Pika Crypto, because this episode is brought to you by Pika Crypto. Pika is revolutionizing the intersection of NFTs and gaming through their Pika trading card game, Elders of Kai. The TCG will be both digital, physical, and Web3 integrated, allowing gamers to play and compete in various different formats. Whether you are a newbie or a pro gamer, there's a spot for you in Pika's ecosystem. So to learn more about Pika and Elders of Kai, go to their website and social media pages. You can find everything in the description for the episode below. Join the Pika community on Telegram to keep up with the latest developments. Again, all links are down below. Enjoy the episode, guys. Talk to you soon. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Block Hash Exploring the Blockchain, episode 341. Today, I have Chris Bradbury, the CEO of Oasis.app, to talk about Oracle's permissionless protocols, Ajna, a whole bunch of different topics I have listed today, as well as what they are doing in the space. Chris, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Before we, you know, jump in and get started and get into the nitty gritty, tell me a bit more about you. I'm sure people are curious maybe what your story is, you know, how you got into this space. Everyone's kind of got a little bit of a unique backstory.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I got into crypto properly in 2018, joined the Maker Foundation as one of their product managers there, kind of their first product manager, just kind of there really to help them build and develop their user interfaces, really. So back then, early 2018, they just had Sai released and didn't have any governance dashboards or anything like that. So kind of dropped straight into it, really. And I came from a fintech background anyway, so I had a lot of experience in the fintech space, like a couple of growth projects before that. But yeah, kind of jumped in two-footed into Maker, kind of the first year and a half development of multi-collateral DAI, which obviously the current Maker protocol that's out there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, been through the roller coasters of kind of the 2018, 2019 bear market off all the hype of 2017. And yeah, all the way through kind of DeFi summer, well, Black Thursday, then DeFi summer. And yeah, now kind of leading the Oasis.app team. Which originally started out as in the Maker Foundation, so it was originally the default front end for the Maker protocol back then, and kind of the Oasis name comes from the Oasis DEX protocol as well. So like the first ever on-chain DEX, really the kind of like simple market, like very first name. But yeah, we when the Maker Foundation dissolved, we took Oasis out of the Maker Foundation and made it what it is today, really, which is kind of this simple, secure access to DeFi, really. So adding more protocols, more networks, and so on.
Very nice. Are you one of the founders of Oasis as well, or did you join later on?
Because it came out the Maker Foundation, we don't really have founders per se. So there was about 15 or 20 of us, or about 15 of us that carried on from the Maker Foundation into the Oasis team. So I was a product lead for Oasis back in the Maker Foundation. So I was kind of, yeah, it was kind of like my baby in a way in the Maker Foundation days. Again, back when it was just like really a really simple interface just to access the Maker protocol. So simple ways to borrow DAI from like ETH, Wrapped BTC. I think back then we had a few more kind of niche tokens as well. And yeah, so we took it out. So we didn't really have founders as such. You could argue like kind of the 15 of us that kind of carried on over from it when the foundation dissolved. So I took on the role of CEO, but really just kind of more CPO, if anything, and like in that transition period, really.
Nice. So what is Oasis.app in a nutshell? Like, what kind of things do you offer to users?
Yeah, so we've got three main product features, really. So it's borrow, multiply, and earn. So borrow is the simplest one, really. It's the kind of oldest feature we had from the very first days of MCD. You can come along with ETH, Wrapped BTC, Staked ETH, Rocket ETH, or anything like that, and borrow DAI against it. And DAI is obviously a USD, like soft peg stable coin. entirely non-custodial and kind of unstoppable as well. So unlike USDC and things like that, they've got the blacklist and so on. Like DAI is the kind of censorship resistant stablecoin, really, and like the first proper stablecoin as well. Again, dating all the way back to the Psy times when that was launched, kind of like late 2017 as its very first version. We've got Multiply, which kind of builds on top of Borrow, just as a UX feature, really. So Multiply is basically allowed you to kind of increase your exposure to those tokens like ETH, RAP, BTC, and so on. Mm-hmm. And effectively, as it from a user point of view, it just reduces the amount of clicks you have to do as a user to get like 2 or 3x exposure to ETH in a fully non-custodial way. So like kind of one click or one transaction, you would lock, say, like deposit, say, ETH. It would flash loan you a load of DAI. It would go and swap all that DAI for additional ETH on the market, deposit that into the vault. You would then borrow DAI from it, paying what they call a stability fee, which is a glorified interest rate, really, just a kind of DeFi term for interest rate on the maker side. And if obviously the price goes up, you've got more exposure to that. If the price goes down, you lose quicker as well. On top of that as well, we then have some automation features, just things like stop loss, auto buy, auto sell, which allows you to set certain parameters and thresholds, which mean you don't have to be at your computer. Say if the market drops very quickly, it can just close you out at a set collateralization ratio or loan to value. So if you've set that kind of that price, that loan to value, let's say it's like 80%, you can go to sleep knowing that if it hits 80%, it's going to close you out. It's going to save you probably 15 to 20% when it comes to liquidation penalties and any slippage and so on, on the liquidations and things like that. And then the third product is Earn, which is kind of the simplest one in a way to understand. You deposit a token and you earn a yield on it. So we've got a couple of different earn strategies at the moment, all on layer one Ethereum at the moment, although very soon, hopefully, a couple of layer twos as well. But like we've got the wrap staked ETH kind of yield loop strategy from Aave on there. So again, in one click, it's kind of mixing Multiply really with a kind of like not gambling on the price going up and down, let's say. So you deposit in, you can get like 7 or 8x wrap staked ETH yield on there. And again, you still pay a borrow fee on the ETH that you're borrowing. So you're borrowing ETH, which you're just swapping for staked ETH and depositing that back in. So it's not straight like 8x the actual staked ETH yield. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of net rate that you find in the middle, and it kind of fluctuates. So at the moment it's pretty low with like kind of the last few weeks of extremely low network activity, but like the 90-day average I think is currently around 15-16% APY, which is obviously about 10% better than holding staked ETH just as a single.
That's trade. A good APY.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's a long-term strategy. So you've got to look into it. Like if you go into it and just look at 1 week and say, oh, I've only earned like annualized rate of 5%. What is this? Mm-hmm. But if you're in it when there's market volatility and there's a lot of like MEV, like kind of payments and stuff going on and going back to the stakers, then you get those rewards and they're kind of multiplied up. So you've got to be in it to make the most of it. It's not one you can just go in and out of and expect to make a big profit like within a few days, unless you get really lucky.
Got it. Is it as simple as like click, stake, and earn, or do you guys also have like community or curated strategies that, you know, kind of go into this as well? Maybe you stake this, stake that, lend against that. I know that's getting really popular in the DeFi space too.
Yeah, no, we try and stick to like a curated experience on Oasis.app. So there's only a handful of tokens and a handful of strategies at the moment as well. And I think like for us, trust, like kind of trust is a real key thing, particularly with everything that's happened over the last 12 months with mainly non-DeFi protocols, the kind of centralized entities, kind of like just basic fraud, really. But we've kind of got almost a simple rule, really, that if we wouldn't use it, then we wouldn't put it in front of our users either. So the strategies we have on there are fairly curated strategies, trusted strategies, again, long-term ones. So it's not like you won't ever see like a 200% like APY that you can earn in 2 weeks, but have maybe a 20% chance of getting rugged. Because we don't know who the team is, or we have no idea where the project came from. So we're a bit slower to getting things on the app, but in theory, we've got that trust element. And we do a lot of user research, which like users speak to a lot as well. So if it's on Oasis, you can hopefully trust it. It's kind of the main thing, really. So We're not there for the kind of degens and right. the ones to ape in. That's basically.
Gotcha. Is Ethereum the main backbone chain for this, or do you guys also tap into like Binance or any of the other chains maybe that this is popular for?
Yeah, no, just Ethereum at the moment. Okay. Like I said, very, very, very soon we're going to have Arbitrum and Optimism on there too. But yeah, again, we were born from Maker, which is obviously only on Ethereum as well. But for us, Ethereum is that. It's that trusted, most secure chain, and it's got the most value on it as well. We're not with the kind of transaction fees and so on that are on Ethereum as well. We're not really targeting the kind of users with like $100 or anything like that. It's obviously very difficult as well to like kind of create apps that one satisfy the user with $100 and the user that's like it's got maybe $100,000 and so. So for us, it's just Ethereum and the layer twos like directly connected to Ethereum at the moment. Maybe we'll explore down the line. But again, it's that kind of curated trusted experience where we're not interested in just grabbing the biggest APY possible or the newest protocol that's just come out on the weekend. We take our time and it's gonna meet certain criteria basically.
Good. That's good. In terms of security and safety for users, what kind of separates you guys from other DeFi protocols and projects out there? What do you guys do differently?
So I guess we don't do that much differently to most DeFi protocols per se, but I think DeFi is the key thing that separates us from a lot of the projects you maybe see out there with like fancy marketing and so on that offer you like these promised APYs and can't explain where the yields are coming from ultimately. So Oasis.app is fully non-custodial. So like there's no technical way for us to like kind of touch your access anybody's funds or anything like that. Even in the automation system, it's fully non-custodial. So even though you give kind of like permission to your vault or your position, you're only giving permission to the automation smart contracts that can only operate within very, very defined bounds that you as a user have set in a transaction. So I mean, that's the biggest thing, right? The fact that nobody can touch your money is the biggest security thing you can have. Like thinking like kind of FTX and so on, or like Celsius and things like that, right? Where you were handing your money over to a third party. Like that's always the biggest risk. And it is with almost any app. And you think back to some of the apps that were built on top of like UST as well. They may have called themselves DeFi, but it was DeFi in name only, really. When it comes to like DeFi projects though, like the big thing is just obviously auditing stuff. Again, kind of banging the same drum, but for us it's like the curated protocols, right? The protocols that have like been around for a while, been audited, been used for maybe a year or so by users in the most part. I know potentially we're going to talk about Arginal, which is a brand new protocol, but we can also talk about kind of some of the steps that they've gone through as well to try and tick those boxes. But yeah, if a project suddenly appeared, kind of think DeFi summer times, right? And the kind of harvest finance days and so on, right? A project would appear on a Saturday, be implemented in some of these front ends on a Monday morning, and by Wednesday, everyone's lost their money. So maybe not through like anybody's fault other than there's a bug in the system when an exploit happened. If an exploit happens on some of the protocols that we have in Oasis, then yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but we think the risk is absolutely minimized. And likely the only major attack vector is through governance now, through like Maker, Aave, and so on.
Can users participate in governance? Is there a system for that?
Through Oasis, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Oasis, we don't have a token or anything like that. We are the front end to access a number of other protocols. And we don't support any governance features on any of the platforms. So if you want to partake in governance through Maker, Aave, or anything like that, Arjuna, you go to their apps basically.
Got it. Yeah, I saw an article on Arjuna and that you guys were supporting it as well, and I thought it was kind of cool. Some of the things put together around permissionless protocols, oracles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in that space. Want to know kind of how you guys are supporting it and kind of understand it a little bit better myself.
Yeah, so we're launching the front end for it, or effectively one of the front ends for it when it eventually launches. So we'll have a dedicated experience that we've been working on for the last couple of months now, following the three core products again. So the Borrow, Multiply, and Earn. I mean, the big thing, that the one reason we're really excited with Archer is it's a real step forward, I think, in DeFi development, and something that kind of we've seen talked about as the risks on a lot of protocols. So like the big thing here is oracle-less, effectively. So it doesn't have any of its own oracles. Effectively, the pools, I think it's kind of best way to describe it, it's a kind of hybrid really between kind of like Maker in some parts, Aave and Uniswap, like combining the best bits of all of those together is the way. So they've taken out one of the biggest risks to say like Aave and Maker, for instance, which is oracles in a way. And I think there's been some great threads on Twitter about it as well, where it's not so much just like removing the oracles entirely, but it's this concept more of like bring your own oracles. So it's as a user, you can then bring to that protocol, or you can use a service on top like Oasis, for instance, and you can understand which oracles they're using, and you can make a decision like, do you trust these oracles or not? Because for us to be able to offer certain services, we have to know the market price of them, right? So whether that oracle is technically a Chainlink oracle to get the market price from, whether we rely on kind of a price on the 1-inch aggregator in a way to say like, hey, if you're trading like 1,000 of token X for like to token Y, like at the moment, this is the price we would get for that trade on 1-inch. So for us, that is the market price on there. And like you present that to the user, and the user can make their own mind up then, or own decision if they want to do that trade or not on there. But I think it's huge. Like a huge step forward in this concept of permissionless protocols, because it's always been one area that's been very difficult. Like there's always been a reliance that you've always had to trust someone. And this is the first one, I think, where you can truly say you're just trusting the code, because the special way they do the pools, they can effectively create a market price on the pools, and then kind of like they were like kind of rational system actors will then go and make sure that price is kind of accurate in a way, just like you see on Uniswap. But now we've got borrowing and lending introduced as well. And then the other side, which is obviously there's one or two that have tried it before or done it before, but it's just the governance-less nature of it, right? So they're launching a protocol. They don't have plans to decentralize. They don't have plans to hand over to governance. Like the code is going to be released, and that is that. There is nothing. There's no multi-sigs. There's no governance. There's no like way to make it more decentralized. It is going to be a entirely permissionless, trustless protocol. Which, yeah, for us is really, really exciting. It really pushes forward the vision, I think, of DeFi and what you can do with it. And then for Oasis, from our point of view, it's almost a perfect protocol for our user interface in a way. It's those three core features: that borrow, multiply, and earn, to be able to do all of those things. And then particularly on the earn side, where you're going to be providing liquidity, it's going to be kind of like active management liquidity. So because the pools are going to be kind of set in the price, you lend at a price bucket in a way. So you lend at almost like the maximum price you're happy for your tokens to be borrowed at. And then that brings in obviously our automation tools as well, because that active, as the market prices do change, and again, that's where the kind of oracles come into it a little bit then for the automation side. So if you want to opt into automation, you opt into using an oracle, but you don't have to use an oracle, but you would opt into using some sort of oracle. And then the automation would keep you lending at a price where your tokens aren't just suddenly going to get converted to the other side of the token, which is kind of almost where the Uniswap side of it comes in. So it's a borrowing and lending platform, but if you're lending and the price of your token suddenly, well, the price of the collateral suddenly, going to get this the right way around now, drops or increases, I can't think off the top of my head now which way,
oh, no worries.
which way around it goes, but your token would swap to that token, just like a Uniswap pool would. And you can think of it like Uniswap V3 with the bands in a way. So you would suddenly become eligible for having it to swap to that token. So the automation there would just mean that, again, you go to sleep at night knowing that if anything went wrong with the tokens in that pool, you would just be taken out of it if needed be.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that type of automation. You know, adds a lot more user protection when they're using some of these protocols. Do you think permissionless is the future of DeFi? Like, do you think it'll take over the space and be like the standard, or do you think it has like a very specific subset of a user base within this industry?
I mean, permissionless was always the original vision of DeFi, sure. Right? And I think you think about the original Maker vision in particular, which obviously the first the first real DeFi project out there, really, from like kind of 2016, like the Purple Paper and so on. Like that always had visions of almost like removing governance kind of gradually in a way. So I think if you talk about the actual vision of DeFi, permissionless is obviously the kind of grand vision, I think. But if you talk to users or talk about it from a user point of view and more mass market users, it introduces huge amounts of risk. And like, I don't think you would ever be able to necessarily recommend, like, I should like the friend on the street to just go and use. Over time, that will hopefully eventually become that level. But it obviously introduces a huge amount of risk for it. So there's no governance to fix any bugs or shut it down or do anything that might like save it from some sort of potential exploit or anything like that. There's no time locks to prevent anything. There's also no risk of governance attacks. So there's this kind of double-edged sword in a way. But I mean, permissionless is the ultimate dream of DeFi. Kind of what DeFi was created out of in a way, but it doesn't always provide the best UX. And we know protocols can get better as well. So you look at Uniswap, that was obviously entirely permissionless at V1, I think entirely permissionless at V2 as well. And then V3 introduced ever so slight governance to it of like the fee switch and so on. But I mean, Uniswap V2 is still quite heavily used, for instance. Like there's still trades going through it on a daily basis and so on, and quite a lot of volume. So yeah, there's definitely a space for permissionless. Is it going to potentially be around in 10 years' time in the exact same way? Don't know. Maybe not. But yeah, that's also the amazing nature of the industry we're in. But like, it could well be. That's the fascinating thing. There's no one out there to stop it, basically, unless Ethereum stops.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, the industry's only been around for 10 years, so it's kind of hard to predict the next 10, huh?
That's it. Yeah, I mean, DeFi's only been around for 4 years, 5 years, really, right? Like I said, the first like Maker protocol, which was the first DeFi project, really, was I think, except for maybe some tiny like maybe minor ones that were like almost pet projects and so on, like that's still going at least, was December 2017. So, and even back then, for instance, when they released the first DAI token, that's where that Oasis DEX contract, that simple market, was created, because there was no way of trading like DEX for ETH or MKR. Back then, it was just wasn't a possibility. These exchanges weren't onboarding like ERC-20 tokens or anything like that, because so few of them existed back then.
Exactly. I mean, I imagine it'll evolve tremendously in the next 10 years, probably the next 5 years. I mean, look where DeFi has come in just the last four since inception. So it's one of the fastest growing sectors here within Web3. So yeah, another 4 years, you know, this stuff might become standard. There might be something better that comes out that gets developed.
Absolutely.
Who knows? Yeah. So it's fun.
Yeah. Even next year, I think as well, like I think if we look at some of the protocols that came out even last year, or that developments of like Aave or Morpho and so on that built on top of Aave and Compound, and now Arjun's taking this next step, like, yeah, next year is probably going to have something just as groundbreaking. And we've got the Curve stablecoin at some point soon as well. We've got the Aave's Go stablecoin as well. So we've still got some super exciting things to look forward to and see what impact they have as well. But yeah, it's going to be it's a fascinating place. And it's the old meme, isn't it? Like, we're still early. But it generally feels like it when you see some of the developments coming out still. And yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I want to talk about Oasis Borrow one more time. Yeah. In terms of how it functions, I know a lot of DeFi uses collateral for borrowing, for lending. Is it the same with you guys? Like, you can put up collateral and borrow against it? Or is there another mechanism, you know, coming out for that at some point? Because I've heard all kinds of different theories on having some kind of credit score that's tied to your wallet address or just different methods. And I'm just curious if maybe you guys have explored some of those, or if collateral is like the main way that you guys are going.
Yeah, so we don't create any of the protocols ourselves. Like, our focus is just on implementing the protocols that are available. So at the moment, it's just a bog standard collateral, like put up collateral and borrow against it. Like the full, again, non-custodial borrowing in a way. So like, I think you touched on like credit scores and so on. I think some of those things are going to be fascinating. I think they are going to be the big developments over the next couple of years, particularly like decentralized identity and so on. So how you can like tie an identity to a credit score, like maybe it's tied to a wallet, maybe bring in some like real kind of like financial background as well into it in a zero knowledge way. So as a user, you don't have to give up anything to the platforms and the protocols. You can just verify that like you are a trusted party in a way. But at the moment on Oasis, it is just over collateralized borrowing. So you put up say 130% of the value of the collateral and you can borrow DAI. So if you come along and play $100 of ETH, you can borrow up to like $70 of DAI or USDC or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's like the only barrier for entry for borrowing and lending is having enough to put up as collateral. And I think the future of that will definitely be like DIDs, like some kind of decentralized identifier attached to your wallet address, maybe ZK proofs, built into that somehow. And then maybe like a good history or something of trading or using certain DeFi protocols might lend value towards lending. So it would make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely in a the early stage, right, where everyone has got into crypto kind of early on, like at any point really in the last 10 years. But I mean, most in the market have got in the last kind of 3 years, right? They have crypto and they have assets to borrow against, especially if they've kind of got in before 2021. They've got them at a price, they've accrued in value, and now they've probably got assets they can borrow against. But yeah, for new users, like it's not really scalable, right? Like we need people to go and buy like ETH or staked ETH or wrapped Bitcoin or something like this and expect them to have enough, like to have bought it first and then want to borrow against it. I think when I first joined Maker, I think my big vision and big hope was we would have tokenized way more assets by now, like real world assets, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. So if you have, let's say you're like a long-term holder of like Tesla stock or something like that, like my big vision was actually instead of, let's say you want to like put a house deposit down, but you don't want to sell your Tesla stock because maybe it's earning you on average like it's increasing in value like 7-10% a year. If you could bring that into DeFi and borrow against it at like 2-3%, and you're still a net 5% up, right? So like that for me is how we is still, I mean, and we've talked about real world assets for years now, right? Like it's not a new story. I think we've made a lot of advancements this year, like tokenizing like T-bills and so on. But I think if we can tokenize some real world assets that ordinary people have, and I'm not saying ordinary people, every ordinary person has stocks or whatever, but if like most people have like pensions or whatever, or probably not pensions, but savings accounts that are in like ETFs or anything like that. Like if you could just borrow against them without having to like to sell them, and there's billions, if not trillions of dollars of money in ETFs and stuff, right? So if we could digitalize those or anything else, like there's so many real world assets out there that you could actually borrow against. And again, if you had that decentralized identity, you could prove that you own X or something without actually, again, having to fully KYC yourself on these protocols. You can just kind of get the thumbs up without the app or the protocol knowing anything about you, just that you're a reliable borrower. Like that for me is the next big thing. And we talked about what are we going to see in the next 4 years. Like if we haven't seen that in 4 years, I'd be astonished.
Yeah, I think tokenization will be the next big thing because that just instantly creates liquidity for any asset, even if it's illiquid, traditionally. I saw today someone, I forgot who it was, I got to look it up again, but they have another protocol and they tokenized US treasuries. And it's a very fascinating thing to tokenize right now with the federal funds rate in the US being so high and treasury prices being, down and affecting a lot of banks and bank deposits. Interesting thing to tokenize and let people trade. But I think stuff like that, that's, historically more difficult for people to understand and to access through DeFi will be a real possibility. And it'll be cool to take stuff like that as well as things like real estate or items or secondhand items or whatever it is and tokenize it and create instant value for it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a few companies that have come out in the last kind of 3-4 months with it. I think Bacta, one of the biggest ones. I'm not sure if that's the one you saw. But yeah, they've got plans on just tokenizing a variety of stocks as well. I mean, the biggest hurdle to that and ordinary people doing it is regulations. Mm-hmm. We've obviously seen the news today that's come out as well regarding Binance and stuff. But we need clearer regulations in this space. Just to understand what can and can't be done. without being silly. And I think once the regulations are cleared up, and they ideally need to be on a kind of global, like a global scale, like the regulators almost need to get together and approach it on as a kind of global collective in a way. But once that's cleared up, and I mean, hopefully it will be more clear in the next couple of years, then yeah, it's going to unlock so much potential. And DeFi, crypto, Web3, like kind of almost whatever you want to call it then as well, I think in 5 to 10 years will just be like underpinning the main kind of financial network without most users even knowing maybe they're using it. So you'd have a mobile app that you're maybe buying like US treasuries or stocks or like Tesla stock or going into an ETF or whatever. And maybe it's tokenized, maybe it's on the blockchain. You get an option to borrow against it at like 2% from like this company. Where traditionally you just see a bank's name up there. Now you might see like Maker or Aave or Arjun or something like that, right? And like this is the rate, these are the terms. Like you're in full control. Like they can't touch your money, only you can, and like just amazing benefits, right? But yeah, I still think that was a big vision in back even 2016, 2017, 2018. So, and I don't think that's changed in reality.
Yeah, I think the next couple of years, especially this year, is going to be really important in terms of figuring out what the regulatory framework is going to look like, especially in the US. Now that things have heated up, and I think we've reached like maximum FUD. when you have a completely inept and uneducated agency like the SEC, which I think is very apparent at this point, to say something is not a security and then the next couple of weeks you go out and sue people for things being securities, it doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. To go after, you know, exchanges like Coinbase and Binance, you know, some of the biggest in the world that are very active at trying to understand and work with regulators, is at least as far as we can tell. It just seems so silly at this point. So I think we've reached some kind of threshold. You know, something's going to happen that's going to be a bit more positive for this industry, whether it's a law, a bill, legislation, enforcement through regulation, or regulation through enforcement, or something through the courts. Tons of court cases going on. So hopefully that stuff is good for crypto and, you know, good for you guys, and kind of opens things up a little bit so we don't have to worry so much. It's frustrating when you wake up on a Monday and you're like, God, what did they do again?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've had a lot of weeks, I think, where we said, oh, like it can't get any worse than this.
It's like complete exhaustion at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, Binance and Coinbase, I think that they're easy targets as well, right? Like they also make the headlines, like there's clear agendas and stuff out there and going on. But it makes the headlines. Like there's clearly no protection of investors going on. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's the main one, in a way. But it's just like it almost seems like it's a game to some, and it's kind of like you gotta get to a certain point. But yeah, like I said, hopefully it'll turn, hopefully it'll change, and in a couple of years time we'll get some really clear regulations and it will just open us up for like even more innovation, because there's some incredible innovation happening, and it's kind of being pushed like harder and harder, like to the limit really of like what you can and can't do, and even to the point of like fear of the unknown right now. Must be holding back innovation and funding or backing from certain people that could actually offer a lot of help and assistance in the space, and just nervous about getting involved because of the regulations. So
exactly. Well, I think we're getting to a head pretty soon, so hopefully something will change in the right direction and get some positivity for once.
Let's hope.
So what's next for Oasis? What do you guys have on your roadmap coming up the rest of 2023? What are some things maybe you're working on that you're excited about, that you want people to keep an eye on?
So I think big thing happening in hopefully in the next 2 weeks is that we launch onto the L2s. So we put Oasis onto Optimism and Arbitrum. To start with, you'll get access to Aave V3 on there, and again you'll see kind of like the borrow, multiply, and earn stuff on there, and we're just testing kind of in the final stages of testing that at the moment as well, and we see like I think a 42x reduction in transaction prices there. So opening an Aave position, for instance, has gone from like, I can't remember what the gas price was at the time, but it's basically went from like $160 down to $2.20, so like this huge cost reduction. So historically, you've kind of been difficult to use Ethereum if you've kind of got less than 50 ETH like almost really from transaction costs and so on, unless the market is just going up. So this will open it up to a much wider audience now. So that's super exciting. And then we've got full Aave V3 functionality coming just onto mainnet as well. And we've got automation coming to Aave as well, which is something we've never had before. And then the really big thing we've touched on already a little bit is Arjuna. So Arjuna support, hopefully, I think early July is when it hopefully coming out. I don't think there's any set dates yet. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing we're going to be most excited about. I mean, it's such a huge step forward in kind of protocols, really. And I know it's been getting a lot of hype on Twitter, and it's interesting to see, because like Blend came up with something similar, like permissionless, oracle-less, like DeFi, NFT lending and borrowing. Mm-hmm. So like to see both these protocols almost announced at the same time was pretty fascinating. And I don't think there's any connection between either of them in any way. But yeah, so that's a big thing for us. And then it's just doubling down on the UX experience then as well, like combining these and speaking to users, listening to users and understanding exactly what they want to do between these different protocols. That's kind of what we pride ourselves on, really.
Nice.
Kind of on the lookout for some new protocols as well, if there's any other like kind of really awesome kind of, I mean, I hope it all works the way we're hyping Arjuna up a little bit, but any more kind of like Arjuna level kind of new protocols coming out that have been through like just endless audits, it seems. That fit into like that Oasis vision, really. But hopefully want to see some users coming back into DeFi as well. The last year has been tough on users. It's almost just been a kind of outflow of users from DeFi. We kind of see that in the gas prices a little bit as well, kind of falling almost to like in the 10s or 20s. When only like a year ago they were in the you saw low hundreds and you were happy, right? A year ago. So right. Hopefully those users can come back, or we can move as many new people, like get new people in on straight onto L2s and so on as well. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting year for DeFi, crypto, and yeah, for Oasis as well. Got some really cool, awesome stuff happening.
Yeah, I'm very excited about DeFi, mostly because I know a lot of funds have been getting pulled from exchanges into self-custody, especially in Bitcoin and Ethereum. And it's very easy to swap and trade in a wallet these days. And I think as DeFi continues to progress, I think that's, you know, where people are going to ideally want to go first. If the exchanges still are having issues with the regulators, you know, why would they immediately put it back to Binance and Coinbase when they could just trade swap in their wallet? So I think DeFi, there's a big surge that's coming in the near future, just around the horizon.
Yeah. And we've got account abstraction now as well, which is kind of seems to be full steam ahead. I think there's an Instadap have released Avocado and so on. And there's just a lot of pretty awesome things happening generally. Because I think we're all aware that like seed phrases is not a scalable mass market solution to managing your money. Even some of the issues I think Taylor at MetaMask kind of highlighted recently, right? When a load of people, had their funds stolen, and I don't think they ever kind of, or maybe I missed it if they did, but I don't think I ever quite like worked out what the actual root cause of all of that was. But it was some like kind of crypto OGs that were caught out with that as well. So like, yeah, seed phrases aren't the way forward. Even the way multi-sigs are and stuff like that at the moment. And yeah, I mean, a year ago we trusted like Trezor and Ledger, right? Trezor and Ledger. And now like maybe it's majority of it's FUD, and I know it's like still opt-in and so on. And like, of course people can update like firmware and stuff. That almost seems to be like the worst kept secret in a way, that like the shock that came out of the Ledger stuff. But it's hard work managing your own money, right? Going back to like 2015 times, like be your own bank and so on.
That's the whole original idea too. And, you know, to be your own bank and self-custody your funds. There's obviously a lot of trade-offs to that. You know, you don't get the same protections and insurance you'd get leaving your money in a bank or a traditional exchange, even a crypto exchange. But you have full control, you know, as long as you know what you're doing. It's incredibly beneficial. It's just a little scary sometimes, because if you ever lose that phrase or you don't take enough precautions, and then there's no getting it back. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think like one thing a lot of people seem to forget, like when they're using crypto, or like at least we see it from a user's point of view, is like if it's too good to be true, like it's probably too good to be true. And Like, even looking back on the whole like USTs thing, right? Like them paying 20% for holding UST. And like, there was so many like reputable people out there, like reputable names and stuff, calling it out and like talking about like the non-sustainable, when it's like, you're like such a high risk thing. I mean, you saw so many people going into it. And when you, like you said, when you haven't got insurance, when you haven't got protection and so on, like we have to rely on people making those more sensible choices. Otherwise you're going to get hurt. And unfortunately the media love a story when users lose money. Right. So like when FTX happened, there was no like mainstream media coverage of like all the DeFi protocols like Compound, Aave, Maker, like not having any losses, like users not losing anything apart from like the value of their tokens due to the fallout of like centralized failure. So, definitely be your own bank is the way forward, and like self-custody, non-custodial, like trading, finance and so on. But yeah, we got to work out better ways of managing those private keys and seed phrases and so on. And yeah, hopefully account abstraction does that a little bit, but yeah, it's, I think that's another big innovation that needs to happen over the next few years.
I think it's coming at some point. I mean, there's a lot of good work being done around seed phrases, being able to condense it down into like a short phrase, like a password you can remember. And Brain Wallet has been really good at that for a long time. There's a lot of different ways where you can condense it down, encrypt it, and then pull it back out by memory if you have to. I'm sure that it'll continue to evolve over time here, and we'll get a better solution for it.
Absolutely, yeah. But again, we're still early, right? That's the everlasting point. I mean, the first websites and emails or whatever were terrible, right? For 10 years or so.
Exactly.
Like the internet was like dial-up internet. Like we've all forgotten about that now, but that was a terrible experience.
Exactly. I mean, the whole username, password, you know, it's not very secure either when you really think about it, and all the different ways someone can get a hold of your email, your username, your passwords these days. I constantly get security alerts for my passwords, and I'm like, really? I just changed it 6 months ago. And then they're like, oh, it's not secure. We found instances. And I'm like, oh my God. So the old web one, web two system is, you know, very flawed today, and it's getting worse and worse. So web three's got a very bright future as people look for those solutions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And ironically, it's much harder to scam people, right? In that sense, if you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, doesn't stop people trying though.
Right. People will always try. How can people use oasis.app? How can they connect to it if they want to borrow and lend, if they want to multiply, if they want to earn? How do they get set up?
Yeah. So it's super simple. Just you just head to oasis.app. That will take you there. Again, it's all non-custodial. So you'll need a wallet. So support all the major wallets like MetaMask, Ledger, Trezor, pretty much any Web3 kind of browser-based wallet. There's a few other hardware wallets on there as well, and mobile wallets. But just connect your wallet with the assets that you've got in there. If you've got one of the tokens that we support, so like ETH, staked ETH, Rocket ETH, whatever, you just pick the strategy. You'll see three options about which are borrow, multiply, or earn. So you pick what kind of what your goal is basically, and just follow the instructions. Like one of the things we pride ourselves on is the UX and like usability of it, like making DeFi simple but secure. It's kind of like our tagline in a way. So it really is simple. Just go to website, connect your wallet. The first time you do it, you'll be asked to sign a signature in your wallet. This just enables us to like kind of, it just proves that you've like, you're connecting with your wallet, and it just gives you a few UX improvements as well. When we know that it's your wallet that's connected to it. So you can follow Vault's like other people's positions. If you want to try and get insight on what they're doing, if they're like increasing risk or decreasing risk, it gives you a few extra things and just shows us that you signed the terms and conditions as well. Once you've signed that message, you're off. As always, just check the URL and so on. Like if you're trying to search for it in Google, like just make sure it is oasis.app, because I think every week we're like submitting reports to have like phishing sites taken down and so on. Once you're in it, it should be very easy to use. Like I said, we've got a few earn strategies on the state ETH side, and you can multiply using like Maker and Aave at the moment. And yeah, very, very soon it's going to be L2s and then Arjuna, which we've got a load of Oasis token rewards for as well, like Arjuna tokens as well. So for the first 2 years, anyone using Arjuna on Oasis is going to be able to like kind of yield farm Arjuna tokens as well.
Awesome. Chris, thank you for taking the time today. Really appreciate it. It's been a really good conversation. Learned a lot about what you guys are doing with Oasis.app, and I think it's a fantastic product for people to use if they want to be in DeFi and they want to connect and, you know, do all these things, multiply, borrow and lend, earn APYs. Yeah, so we'll put links in the description as well so people can check it out. The correct URLs, don't go. Just try and Google it and hope you'll find the right one. Go to the right website, double check everything. Yeah, thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.